Welcome into the Train with the Best podcast, a podcast by trainers for trainers. I'm Craig Hoffman, a personal trainer, performance coach, and media personality.
And I'm Chris Gores, master trainer and international presenter.
And today we're going to talk about aerobic versus anaerobic training. We've talked about some of these topics recently when Rachel was on talking about some of the zone two training and some of the longer run stuff. We've also talked about this in the past for various, we had an episode, I think, called Bleep the Beep Test. So we talked about some of that as well. But we saw a reel the other day on Instagram, Chris, by a guy talking about Christian McCaffrey. And obviously, for those that don't know, Christian McCaffrey is an MVP candidate in the NFL. He is the best running back in the league. He is a physical freak of an athlete. He has scored a touchdown in almost every game the last year and a half. His dad is an all-time great wide receiver who won a couple of Super Bowls in the late 1990s. His mom was an athlete as well. His brothers are very athletic, but Christian is the supreme athlete of the family, and his trainer trains him basically all anaerobically. It's all super high intensity efforts. In this reel, the guy who is, I guess, like a partner or a friend of the actual trainer says, like, one of the things that they really do is focus on the rest, making sure that when they do these 5 seconds or less interval bursts, that it really is super high intensity, and that requires a lot of rest in between. And the kind of punchline of this reel is that, doesn't he have to take the conditioning test? Yeah, he won it. He was the best one out there. And so the idea that you could easily take away is that if you just stack anaerobic efforts, to use the term that they use, that you'll get in tremendous shape, and all this zone two cardio, super slow, be out there for hours, is actually not the best way to be fit, not the best way to get in shape. Of course, Chris, we have a podcast to talk about things for longer than the 45 seconds of an Instagram reel, right? And there's a lot of nuance and gray area here. So I think the way we should simplify this down to try to make it easy is talk about the benefits of aerobic versus anaerobic training, which would first involve actually defining aerobic versus anaerobic training.
Yeah, so let's quickly define that. Aerobic is the presence of oxygen, anaerobic is the lack of a presence of oxygen. That's simply how it's defined.
A plus for Chris Gores in science. Right?
But sometimes we overcomplicate things, and sometimes we want to make it like something that is really not, or you're pushing this agenda, so you try to like convolute the original topic, and that's really all it is: the presence of oxygen and the lack of oxygen, right? So like anaerobic activity is going to be 4 or 5, maybe 6 seconds at the most, where you're all out effort, you're in that ATP CP phase, you're super explosive, you're super fast. It's not going to last very long. That's truly anaerobic, right? A big lift, a big power lift, that's also anaerobic. You're trying to create as much power as you can. And that's your most powerful energy system in the body. Whereas aerobic is something that is meant to last for a long time. So that's something that is meant to go for a lot longer and have endurance. So those are the two energy systems. And then it breaks down into different zones, like zone 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, which we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and that can be a little bit of the semantics in it. And I try not to get too caught up in the semantics. I try to get the principle of it. Like, what's the principle of aerobic stacking? What's the principle of training at a low level versus at a high level, right? And that's what we try to take. And the other principle that I would want to point out here is the filling the gaps principle. That's what we always do when we're assessing somebody. We're not just assessing their movement, we're assessing their life. Like, you want to get better at this. Okay, well, what are you already getting? One, so I'm not redundant in my program. And two, so I can identify the gaps in what you're already doing, and how can I fill that gap, right? So for instance, right now we have basketball players who are now in season, right? And so what are those basketball players getting on a daily basis from their practices, right, from their games?
And this is like the biggest mistake I think young trainers and performance coaches especially make, is like, I got a basketball player, I got to make him jump higher. And it's like, right, no, not right in season, because that's all they're doing is running and jumping in the season.
Right. And so you're thinking about like, what are the things that they're not doing that I need to do, that they need and are going to get from me. So when you look at an athlete like Christian McCaffrey, like a soccer player, somebody who needs to get fit. Well, you look at the things that they're already doing to get fit. So if they're already practicing, if they're already working with the skills coach, if they've got other training sessions other than you, what are you going to do to fill that gap? Or are you just going to be something that is redundant, right? So if I'm looking, if you look at a typical football practice, they're going to be in your zone 2, 3, maybe 4. They're not going to get a whole lot of zone 1, and they're not going to get a lot of zone 5. So for me, the low-hanging fruit there, the things that they're not doing, is the 4 or 5 second all-out burst sprint where we're truly working on maximum speed, because that doesn't happen in a football game that often anyways, right? So that's what I'm going to do so that I'm not repeating the things that they're going to get in a practice anyway. But that doesn't mean that that's the only thing that that made that person special, right? So I wouldn't go as far as to say like, hey, this is the reason why he's passing his fitness tests with flying colors and he's winning and all the other stuff. Yeah, it was a contributing factor, but that's not why.
For sure. I mean, I'd say part of the contributing factor too is like, if he's got to run at 15 miles an hour for this conditioning test or whatever the number is, I don't know what conditioning test the San Francisco 49ers use, but like, that's so easy for him because in part because of these anaerobic efforts, right? Because Christian McCaffrey can run 25 miles an hour. I mean, he hits like 22 in pads, so he can probably run right. like 23, 24 miles an hour without dudes chasing him and, you know, having to shift around them and
right.
carry a football. Then running at 14, 15, 17 is like not that bad for him.
Yeah.
And so like he's out for a pretty easy day on that conditioning test. But that doesn't mean that he is all of a sudden going to go out and win a mile or a 2 mile race or whatever. And I think that's part of it is like for football, this is the perfect conditioning for him. Right. And the perfect movement quality that we're looking for. Like he needs to be quick and explosive. And so they may and mobile. And if you watch some of the stuff, it's not just like, there are some like crazy stuff he does in the weight room with very, very heavy weight and stuff. There's also some traditional plyometrics of box jumps and things, but they also do like some animal movement and things like that. And you see an incredibly explosive, twitchy, but mobile athlete, which is exactly what he needs to be. And he needs to be able to repeat that once every 40 seconds or so for 3 hours with you know, extended breaks in between while his defense is on the field. That is what football is. That's going to be a very different, you know, fitness style, if you will, than a soccer player, than a basketball player, because a basketball player also needs to be explosive, twitchy, and mobile. They just have to run, you know, up and down the court in between. So it's like be super explosive laterally on defense to stay in front of your man. If you get stuck guarding the ball on a specific possession, do a high-end jog down to the other end. Maybe you get the ball and now you got to make a move off the dribble. You have to jump at a decently high level, attack the rim, or you have to be calm enough to execute a jump shot and make it. And then you got to run back on the other end and repeat that, you know, for about 6-7 minutes before there's a foul or a TV timeout or whatever it may be. And so the fitness demands of these sports all matter. And to your point, you're going to get those demands by playing them. I think that's the hardest thing. You could talk about this for sure.
Yeah.
Of football is like, they don't play pickup football.
Yeah.
So like when you're training Lorenzo, you know, in the off season, he's not getting football conditioning necessarily until he goes to OTAs. Whereas basketball and soccer, like you play pickup a ton in the off season. Right. So there's definitely a lot of, I would say, variance in terms of needs. And then that becomes a great question for us as trainers to say, hey, how does all this stuff apply? And what is it that we need based off of not just the sports demands, but the nature of the other training that the athlete that we're working with is doing?
Yeah, you touch on a good point there. Like football shape, hockey shape is going to be pretty unique in the sense that there's like you can have your wind and then you can be in football shape, right? So we're talking about right here with that particular Instagram reel. He's just talking about him having the right wind to be able to play the position before we start getting into what it's like to put the pads on and take 25 hits a game, right? That's something completely different. Cause that's just like your body callousing to the hits and getting used to that. But when it comes to the wind and getting yourself ready, the principle here is, like you said, if you're able to run 25 miles per hour, then 15 miles per hour is a 60% effort for you, right? 20 miles per hour is
you go with your math again.
Oh, this is easy math, right? It's like five times five is 25. So every five is 20%, right? So 20 miles per hour is 80% of 25 miles per hour. But 18 is usually the cutoff point. Like we take a look at 18 miles per hour on GPS data as now that's classified as high speed running. Anything under 18 is not really high speed running. You're not really doing anything that's going to be an action that anybody's like looking at, right? That's just under 18 miles per hour is just not happening on the football field in between the whistles, right? Maybe after the whistle. So we look at 18 miles per hour and can somebody run 18 miles per hour and how much does that cost that person, right? Because like you said, being able to run that fast is one thing. Being able to run that fast subconsciously where it's not an effort and you can now think about things like what is the defense doing? Where is my cut? Where is my read? What are my route options? Who's hot on this route, right? What is the down and distance? What are the scenarios? Like how many times? All those things matter. And on the basketball court, that matters, right? So people talk about, you know, being able to stay, chase Steph Curry around and what that feels like after a game. It feels like death. It's not just the running. It's having to recognize all the different screens that he's running through. Who's on the court? Like what's the scenario and, you know, where is he running to? Who's setting the pick and all this other stuff? So it's not just the physical conditioning, but that's the baseline that you have in order to get to the other stuff, which is the football intelligence stuff, the basketball intelligence stuff, right? Because it's not a track competition. Yes, it's running is part of it, and you have to be able to have that, but that's not the entire sport.
The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by Momentous. And Chris, I remember when Momentous was just a company with three protein blends, and then that was it. Now, pretty much anything in the supplement game, you can get at livemomentous.com.
That's right. If you go to livemomentous.com right now, you might not even recognize some of these products. And for me, I'm definitely going to change my monthly subscription. I've been getting the Brain Drive. I've been getting the Elite Sleep. I've been getting the Collagen. And it looks like I need to up my game a little bit and take a look at some of these products like the Alpha.
Yeah, no doubt. And what's great about Momentous's website, which you can go to right now, livemomentous.com, is that they also have a lot of descriptions and information on best usage, best practices. It's not just like, hey, here's all this stuff. It's like, hey, are you looking for this? Well, then you should get that. So any supplementation needs you may have, they've got you covered. And it's stuff that, like, look, if you want the 4-hour description on what Tongat Ali does, you go to the Huberman Lab podcast. They got you covered. That's not us. But it might be something that you need. So go check it out. And here's what we do have for you. We have a discount. LiveMomentous.com. Use TWTB at checkout for a special discount. TWTB is in Train with the Best at LiveMomentous.com. The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by Jocku. And we've been partners with Jocku for basically a year now, Chris. Can't believe how much the time has flown by. And it's still just as spectacular as it was when we discovered it.
It's plain and simple. Good, reliable timing on your speed drills, on your multi-directional drills. You know, how many of us who are speed coaches just need a good, accurate time out there to verify, one, the results that we're getting, and two, the trends that we're going in, right? So this is a great product for anybody who is a speed trainer or anybody who works with athletes. And now you're even able to track vertical jump, which is such a valuable tool when you're taking a look at somebody's program. So make sure you check out Jocku. And Craig, what's the code that they should be using?
You go to jocku.com/discount/TWTB. You get a 20% discount on all Jocku products, so the muscle blasters and everything as well. But yeah, I mean, I used to always love coming down to Onyx, testing my vertical on the Vertec machine. Now I don't even have to do that. You don't need a big, giant, high ceiling to have a Vertec and be able to extend it up. You just put the Jocku on your wrist, set it up. There you go. It's all cell phone app based. So go to jocku.com/discount/TWTB and get 20% off the Jocku Speed and all other Jocku products. The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by BlazePod. And Chris, what's so great about BlazePod is you can use it in every part of the workout. You can use it to help warm up. You can use it in kind of your main parts of the workout. You can use it as a finisher. What's your go-to recently with BlazePod?
Yeah, for me, what I love using BlazePod for is just keeping our athletes engaged. So, you know, you can get into the rut of the workout where you're doing time sets. So if you've got 30-second plank, a 30-second wall sit or whatever, but if you add BlazePods to that, now that 30 seconds doesn't seem like it's so long, and it keeps the clients a little bit more engaged, a little bit more motivated to perform well, and it's something that just adds a lot of fun to the session.
No doubt. We could all use a little attention for our inner child. And who doesn't love stuff that lights up? And oh, by the way, it's an elite training tool, the best of all worlds. And of course, we got the hookup for you. Use the code TWTB at blazepod.com for 15% off your order. That's TWTB, as in train with the best, for 15% off at blazepod.com. So when you're playing a sport, you have that mental side as well. You have that mental load, but there's also even beyond that, like if we want to look at hybrid racing, for instance, like
right.
There's not decision-making in that. I mean, there probably is at some point, but it's like, do I want to keep going or do I want to take my break now?
There's not that instant decision-making, but there is some
strategy.
The strategy is
much less. That's right. There's strategy, not strategy. there's definitely thinking about like, hey, am I on my splits, whatever, but like it's very different than like, hey, they ice this pick and roll, where does the ball need to go? Reading out blocks if you're Christian McCaffrey. But you know, any kind of racing, like you still have a lot of different factors going into it. And when you talk about the training for it, I think that's important to point out. When I talk about factors, I'm actually really just talking about systems within the body, right? You have your, obviously you have your three energy systems, you have your ATP base, you have your anaerobic, you have your aerobic, right? Mm-hmm. And I always really like that term that we used when I was at EP, and actually you probably used when you were at EP, you might've invented the thing, explosive performance of energy systems development, as opposed to thinking about it as like,
I did not,
you know, cardio or whatever.
I did not come up with that. That was something that we learned from API, who is now Exos.
I figured that's where it might have come from.
But
your energy systems development.
Yeah.
But then you also have like how that interacts with your CNS, your central nervous system. You have how that interacts with your musculoskeletal system. And I think when you think about those things, some of this stuff starts to really come together. So I'll take two different ends of the spectrum here as an example. Mm-hmm. When we talk about some of the aerobic training from a running standpoint, obviously the primary motivation for like zone two training is building a bigger engine, aerobic capacity. Mm-hmm. But I also need to build up ground contact tolerance. Like if I'm going to run a half marathon or a marathon, I need to get my body used to that repeated low impact ground contact over time. If those are high impact ground contacts, then I'm not going to be able to do that for very long. So if I want to be able to train for an hour and a half on a long run, I need to, by nature, have it not be as intense. That's right. Going to come with the lower heart rate. Those two things work together. I get the aerobic, oxygen system, you know, bigger engine benefits. I also get extended time for ground contacts. By the same token, you look at some of the people who limit ranges of motion or whatever it is, or even McCaffrey doing these anaerobic, style of training, the quality that he gets is so high.
Right.
Because he really does take his time in between sets. And it's like, I'm going to go all out for 5 seconds and it's truly all out. And then I'm going to wait 5 minutes and I'm going to do it again. And it's really all out. I saw Kristen Holmes from Whoop, who's been on the show before, talk about like sprint interval training and, you know, really taking your time in between sprints and some of the benefits of that. I think Joel Seedman is wackadoodle with a zillion things that he does. and folks that are familiar know, but like part of the reason that, you know, to the extent that his stuff works, it works is because when he does these 90 degree joint angles religiously, you can go heavier. And so you get a ton of load because you're not actually stressing the joints from a range of motion standpoint. There's benefit to that, even if it might not be the benefit that he thinks it is. And so I think when you look at it from the quality or the quantity end, like there's the interaction of the systems at play here that have benefits beyond just the thing that you might be attacking. And keeping those things in mind is important as a trainer as you try to fill in the gaps and get your athlete where they need to go.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to consider too here is like, what level of athlete are you working with? Because right. Christian McCaffrey, as you said, is the top 0.1% of athlete that anybody's ever going to work with. And I hate using him or the first round of the NFL draft as an example for anything. Like, I am vehemently against, like, kids specializing in one sport. And every year the NFL draft happens, and every year they're like, everybody in the NFL draft played multiple sports when they were kids. I'm like, guys, that's the terriblest argument that you can make, because you're using the 0.1% of athletes in the world to make your argument. And that's a good argument. Just don't use them as an example, right? So I'm not going to use Christian McCaffrey as an example here, right? But what I'm going to use is a player that I worked with in the offseason by the name of Gianna Lucchesi. And Gianna was worried about passing her beep test. And to get her to pass the beep test, she had to run 35 or something like that, something that she had only done once before. And she was super stressed about it, as most college girls are, right? They're worried about passing the beep test so they can get onto the field and all the other stuff, right? And we never did anything over, like, 6 maximum effort reps. Now, her maximum effort was not 5 seconds. Okay, and here's why I talk about level of athlete.
Right.
Christian McCaffrey is going to be able to empty his tank in 5 seconds. If you say, give me all that effort in 5 seconds, he's going to give it to you. Gianna is not that. It's going to take her 15, 20 seconds for her to empty her tank. She's not there, right? Just like we talk about this in weight training all the time. Normally, when we say, hey, pick up a 5-rep max weight and let's get 3 reps, people are picking up weight that they could actually do for 25, 30 reps because they have no idea what they're actually capable of, right? So you have to give them a little bit more volume. I had to give Gianna a little bit more volume. So we did not as many repetitions because the time is still going to be about the same, but she knew that, hey, like, for these 6 reps, I need maximum effort here. And we never did anything more than 6 maximum effort reps, whether it be on the woodway or it be like a shuttle run or whatever it was. And guess what? She'd be gassed afterwards. And she crushed the beep test. We never did the beep test. That was not something that we did. We never ran for more than like 10 seconds, right? So that I like using her as an example because she is more like the regular population than Christian McCaffrey is, although she's still a very good athlete, but she's more in line with who you're going to be training than Christian McCaffrey is.
Then you have, like, on the other end of things, like, people who probably aren't trying, they read like the zone 2 stuff, but they're not trying right. nearly hard enough. Right.
Right. Right.
And I thought this quote from the Hybrid Letter, which is a newsletter by my friends, Alex and Judd, Alex Shabo, who is competing, like, I think right now or in a couple of hours as we're recording this, down in the DECA doubles world championships. She's climbing the ranks of women in high rocks. Like, she's awesome. But she interviewed Rylan Shadag. Rylan, I probably just murdered your last name. I sincerely apologize. But Rylan is one of the elite 15 men in high rocks. And in this newsletter, Alex asks Rylan about zone 2 training, and he goes, people are doing zone 2 wrong. I saw this video on the internet 2 days ago where this Instagram influencer was talking about getting in her zone 2 work, and she was walking on a treadmill. There's one of two things happening. Either you're in zone 1 and you're calling it zone 2. That's what most people do because they don't realize how much work is actually done in zone 2. Or you were so aerobically unfit that walking puts you in zone 2 and I'm worried about you. She didn't have the treadmill on an incline or anything. And I think about that, like, Instagram influencer type of person who thinks that they're crushing it, or like just a new athlete who is deconditioned and like wants to get in better, you know, increase their fitness. And it's like, well, we got to stay in zone 2. We got to walk. Like, is that actually the best way to get that person in shape? I would say no way. To just think like, oh, if my heart rate crosses 140, like, I'm doing it wrong. I'm not maximizing my fitness because zone 2 training. Like, you don't actually understand remotely what's going on here and how, all the systems at play work.
Yeah. So this is also another very specific population, right? Again, on the opposite end where zone 2 is going to matter. And, you know, for these athletes, these are athletes that are looking at their watches, are looking at their Fitbits and making sure that they're in their rep range. So let's quickly define what zone 2 is going to look like as far as percentage of maximum heart rate. So you might know the numbers better than I do on zone 2. Is it like 60 to 70%?
Yeah, typically. I'm gonna go back to my run yesterday and see what Whoop has as they at the way they define it. Yeah, they go zone 260 to 270.
Yeah.
Because like then it's funny because the numbers are slightly different depending on what app I'm in, which like actually highlights the problem, right? Like I think Garmin might have it slightly different. And also like, you know, do you actually know your max heart rate?
Yeah, that's the other thing too, right? Like who knows what their actual max heart rate is, right? It's not 220 minus your age, I promise you that.
Right. Mine's better than 191 because I hit that the other day in a workout and wanted to die. Garmin doesn't even do percentage. Or, I mean, it is based off percentage, but like they give on their app a number. So like according to Garmin, my zone two is 114 to 132. I know in Whoop when I hit 136 that it triggers up to zone three. So that's a 4 beat per minute, you know, difference. And I can guarantee you that the benefits that I receive from running in that range don't really change between 133 and 138.
Yeah. So again, this is where it gets a little bit murky. And again, like this is where going back to the beginning, don't get too caught up on the semantics of no, zone two is absolutely 60 to 70% because some people might define it a little bit differently. But let's just use 200 as your max heart rate to make it an easy number. So somewhere between 120 and 140, just as a principle of zone two, don't quote me and say that's zone two for everybody. Right. So to be there, it has to be more than a walk on a flat treadmill. Obviously it depends on how fast that walk is. But
sure,
it's going to be some effort, and like you're going to be sweating a little bit. I like to think of zone two as like kind of like an in-between pace, right? Like, hey, like you're getting subbed off the field. All right, jog on the field, right? Things like that. Like that's what's happening in between the plays, right? So you need to have that if you're a football player. But if you're competing in something like High Rocks or you're a triathlete, this is something that you have to monitor and get good at. It's a skill, just like anything else. Just like speed is a skill, right? Like, this maintaining zone two is also a skill, and it's something that has to be practiced, right?
And it's something that requires humility.
Yeah,
you've got to be, if you're going to do zone two training to reap the benefits of that. And just to be super clear, like, you know, as we talk about some of the benefits of this high intensity stuff, like we're not saying zone two doesn't have its place. That's actually what we're saying right now. Zone two definitely has its place, especially amongst endurance athletes, but you're going to have to respect it, right? Like I do a lot of right now as I'm continuing to build up that engine, I try to at least once a week do a walk run interval, and like I can go for a 90 minute long run and like keep my heart rate relatively close to zone two at the right pace. And it's getting to the point that pace isn't even embarrassing anymore. It's not great, but it's not embarrassing. But part of that is because I try once a week to do a walk run where I truly, truly keep it in zone two and don't let it touch zone three. And so like there's a discipline level about that, but like, you know, in the mantra of keeping the main thing, like when I'm doing that training, that is the main thing.
Yeah. It's a skill that has to be practiced, just like Olympic lifting is a skill that has to be practiced. And for me, it's a finding that balance of being able to find your zone two, as well as also being able to instantly find zone five. Right? How can you instantly get in there? Right? So doing those things and getting good at those things, like one thing that I will say is, your body's going to adapt to everything, and where people get into problems is they think that doing all of this or doing all of that is going to translate into me being better at everything, and that's just not true, right? Like if we take a look at squats, for an example, if you practice full depth squats, whatever you define that as, versus half versus quarter, that doesn't necessarily mean that it goes up and down the spectrum. Like my quarter squats aren't going to help my full squats, and my full squats don't necessarily help my quarter squats, because I can squat a hell of a lot more in a quarter squat off of the pins than I can in full. Well, same thing with zone two and zone five. If I only train in zone five, I'm going to get really good at that. That doesn't necessarily mean that's helping zone two. And if I only train in zone two, I'm really going to get really good at that. That doesn't necessarily mean that's helping zone five. Right. And that's where I think that people make the mistakes, is like, hey, this got me in such great shape, this is the answer, I don't have to do all the other shit. And that's not true.
Right.
Right. So whatever it is that, again, just go back to finding the gaps. What's the gap? If this is your gap, then work on this. And that's, and then yes, that will help to a certain extent, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, that that's the answer for everybody. And that's the only thing that you have to do. You still have to do the other stuff.
Right. No, 100%. And I would say two things. One is make sure that the gaps stay the thing that's getting filled in, and you don't like overfill them in so that the thing that you were doing becomes the gap.
Right.
Right. Like you have to keep the main thing, the main thing.
There you
go. Oh my God. Oh, I've been doing all zone two. I need to do zone five. Chris said I need to fill in the gaps on the Train with the Best podcast. Then you do all zone five. And it's like, well, now you have a gap at zone two. You goofball.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't do that.
Like,
you know, keep it, keep the percentages right.
So, for instance, Bill Belichick was a genius in the NFL because he found gaps. Like, I'm going to get a left-footed punter. I'm going to get the short, shifty wide receiver who can play in the slot that played quarterback in college and understands the route concepts and the choice routes and this and that, right? Okay. But you can't fill an entire roster with Wes Welkers. You still need somebody like a Gronk to stretch it over the top. That's what completes your offense, right? So if you're talking about being a complete athlete, and again, that depends on how you define what it is that you compete in, what it is that you want to be as an athlete, right? Like, you have to take a look at the things that you need to do to get yourself better and fill those gaps. But like you said, not making the mistake of making the gap the main thing.
The other thing I was going to say is another quote from Rylan, which I thought was really great, that talks about like the intermixing of all these things too. And he goes, some of the lowest hanging fruit that you can get in running is doing regular, very high end speed work because it creates the neuromuscular connection. If you've never run fast, your brain hasn't connected those neurons. It's teaching your muscles how you run fast. And so it's just a great reminder that like there are a lot of different systems at play, energy systems, neuromuscular, CNS, musculoskeletal, like the endurance of ground contacts or whatever, you know, your bone density, like there's all this stuff that's at play. And that's why being well-rounded is the principle that we kind of apply to all of this, and making sure that, again, the main things are the main things, the percentages are right, and that you ultimately fill in the gaps to be able to have a long and sustainable career.
Well, that goes back to the stuff with Christian McCaffrey of learning how to run at full speed, at high speeds for short distances and short bursts. And, you know, again, I'm not going to use Christian McCaffrey. I'm going to use a gentleman who I trained by the name of Justin Moyer, who is an elite level triathlete. And he came in and he's like, no, I don't do plyos anymore. I don't do this anymore. I don't do big strength training stuff. I'm great at my pool work and this and that. And we started working on explosive movements, started teaching him how to do plyometrics, how to warm up for plyometrics, because he's a little bit older in age. So it's not like he can just jump out there and start doing broad jumps. And then we started doing some explosive pushing movements. And now he's like, man, Chris, I'm flying in the water now. When I'm doing my runs, I feel like I'm flying and I'm not even trying. And it's because it's that low-hanging fruit. If you're not doing those things, if that's the gap, and that's the gap for most, because honestly, high-speed running is hard to achieve. Like, people don't necessarily know how to do that. And they think that 15 miles per hour is high-speed running. Remember, 18 miles per hour. So, like, 15 miles per hour is, what, a four-minute pace? So, think about how fast 18 miles per hour is. That's how fast you have to run to be considered high speed running.
Yeah.
For everybody that's out there. Now,
kids,
you may not be able to.
Don't go try that on a treadmill.
Yeah. Yeah. Your treadmill probably goes up to 12 and a half miles per hour and that's it.
Yeah.
But
the point is, these are short sprints on a track.
Yeah. 40 yards, 40 yards, 50 yards. Can you get there? All right. Here's another one. Can you run 40 yards? And if you're timing the last 10 yards, even if you're having like a friend time you or whatever, right? That last 10 yards has got to be in less than 1.04 seconds. 10 yards.
I think the answer is no for me, dog.
You're going to get close, but that's the thing there that like people have to get to. Instead, I'm not saying stop all of your zone two work, but make sure you're getting some of this stuff in, because it is going to help, not just with the neuromuscular connection that Rylan was talking about, but just filling in that gap, that energy system that you're not using.
Totally. And it's a good reminder too that we're talking about performance here. And if you want like some other stuff in terms of beginners and where people start and how you ultimately get to this point where you're ready for that performance end, you know, go listen to the podcast we did with Rachel on running a couple of weeks back, because she had a really great stuff on kind of that, how to get started safely. And then ultimately you can take it to this level with the speed training, with the intervals, with the high speed running, et cetera, et cetera. All right. That is it for this edition of the Train with the Best podcast. We've got a bunch of great stuff coming up over the next few weeks. We look forward to that and we'll see you then right back here.